Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. It's your host, Chef Jeff Fell. Today we are talking Java. Join me as I venture into the dynamic world of coffee with the brilliant minds behind a thriving coffee empire, Patrick Meyer and Jamie McBain. We explore the brand's evolution from the genesis of Geek Grind for gamers to the introduction of Pure Canopy, emphasizing coffee from women growers, all stemming from a few sips of tequila. Prepare for a narrative filled with unexpected turns as our guests delve into unconventional coffee experiments, the stress of importance of self-editing, and unveil the fascinating process of killing, milking, and growing. So grab your favorite mug, make yourself at home, and enjoy this caffeinated conversation.
How the actual coffee company got started, right? Yeah. I kind of know the bits and pieces throughout the years, but really the true origin.
I'll tell you the story.
Because obviously, your backgrounds have to play a piece into it. Now, I want to talk about that because you would not connect the dots of what you guys have done and coffee. But how did the coffee company and kind of those origins and kind of where it's at today?
Sure. So jump in, Jamie, too. But the early years, I was in Colombia. My wife is Colombian. Amazing family down there, and I was sitting in Restrepo, Colombia, near Lago Calima, this beautiful lake, which is near the bigger city of Cali, Colombia, with my wife's uncle, Gustavo. And Gustavo, for many, many years, has been leading a cooperativa, a collective of coffee farmers in central south Colombia. He started as a accountant out of college and eventually rose to lead that organization of hundreds of farmers. So I had previously, in previous years, we'd spend a lot of time down there. It's our second home, seeing her family. We'd go tour the coffee farms. And I think around that time, they had just built a new production facility in Tuluá, a close by town. And this is a beautiful, huge production facility with threshing to remove the parchment from the green coffee as it comes in from the farms to grade it, sort it, and ultimately distribute it around the world. So we had gone to see the threshing plant or the new production facility and also a nearby roaster where they were roasting locally for grocery stores and whatnot. And we went back out to Restrepo and we're sitting in Gustavo's finca, which is his weekend farm, as a lot of people have because it's so hot down in the valley. These families have small farms outside of town, and he had jacuzzi in the little house, and we're eating various Colombian delights. And I started talking to him more about where the coffee sold, and I said, and there might have been a little tequila involved,
oh, of course,
here and there, just for tasting purposes. And I'd asked Gustavo, I said, where do you sell all your coffee? Because he was saying, well, every year we sell everything we produce. And I said, where do you sell it in the States? And he says, oh, I don't sell it any in the States. I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, where do you sell it? He says, well, Benelux, South Korea, mostly Europe. And I said, oh, okay, but why don't you sell in North America? He's like, I don't have a friend there. Very South American.
Yeah.
Latin business culture. And what he meant is he just doesn't really know anybody, and they're going to sell it out anyways. They're going to sell all the coffee. I said, he said, you and I should sell some coffee in North America. And I said, that'd be great. We had a little more tequila and decided, I think I can probably do something, Gustavo, like a little project.
Yeah.
Right. And Jamie and I both come from the toy and infant products business and a lot of entertainment and licensing. And, we have our own, entertainment geeky fans of, pop culture and things like that. And I thought, what if we create a brand called Geek Grind? This is before Pure Canopy which is our second brand. Let's create a brand called Geek Grind. Just came to mind, and make things like Dragon's Roast and Elven Enlightenment, Wizard's Mist and Dwarven Dawn.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to do that. Right. And that would be fun. So Jamie and I were business associates first and then friends after. And as this idea started to come together, he and I were already working on some other projects together, completely unrelated to coffee, but in the gaming space, board okay. gaming. We had done some Kickstarters very successfully and some other things like that. So as I often did during those years, I'd call Jamie and tap him for artwork, layouts, you know, work in Illustrator and various printing needs, and or all the way through mechanical engineering and design of hard products. And Jamie and I started working on the layouts. And subsequently, we kind of got all that rolled up, created five or six SKUs, and decided to print and package all of it down in Columbia and bring it up to Gen Con in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the big gaming conventions. We had a couple of tables. I'll pause there, but that was really how Geek Grind started.
So it was basically over some tequila.
It was over some tequila, as yeah. all the best ideas are.
Right.
Well, I'll give it to you from my perspective. So like Pat said, we were working on other things and we were in this gaming space anyway. And I was literally, it was a Saturday night. I was sitting out on my deck. It was in the summer and I had my laptop and I was working on some engineering issues.
I've never heard this from his perspective.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So I'm my wife and I, it's a beautiful night. I'm got my laptop. And like I said, I was doing some engineering / design stuff. And I get a text and it's a picture for a Pat, like in a hot tub overlooking this beautiful valley
with Gustavo.
Right. I'm like, where are you? So I'm in Columbia. I'm like, oh, okay. That's cool. Right. Have fun. Right. And then I go back to work and I get another text. Hey, what do you think about coffee? I love it. He goes, do you think we could sell it in the US? Do you think we could build a brand? Absolutely. Right. And I get, and in between these texts are like pictures of him and his, you know, his yeah. family in Colombia and tequila in the valley. And right. It was right. Saturday night. And, yeah. And so we started talking because it was on our minds. We're working in this game space already. Yeah. And it was and it just happened so easily. Like a lot of times you have to extract that kind of stuff. But Dragon's Roast and Dwarven Dawn and Wizard's Mist, like all of these things.
The story wrote itself.
It really did.
Well, and if you both have a common interest, it makes it a lot yeah. easier to just play on and be like, oh yeah, for sure. We can make that happen.
Yeah. And it really came together so easily. And you know, the supply of coffee was there and right. And we started, it was great because it was really like turnkey. It was everything was done in Colombia with the roasting, the packaging. We had the packages made in Colombia and we were bringing in the finished product to sell in, you know, into the States. And then it kind of took on a life of its own. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing I think I'd add to that is that what made it so, I think, poignant and such a immediate opportunity for us and an interest wasn't just the sell side or the marketing side. It was that I had previously kind of waded into this coffee culture in Colombia, right? Like the coffee culture mm-hmm. in the mountains, right? Where we're suddenly, almost I didn't even see it happening, but I'm on a first name basis with families growing coffee just because we've been visiting for them for mm-hmm. a few years, you know, and maybe it's the third or fourth time I've visited this farm and this family with Gustavo and my wife. And these are people that they've known for many, many years. So as Geek Grind started to do, did very well. We flew up on Delta Airlines from Cali. We made some Dragon's Roast K-Cups, actually, even that early. Whole bean coffee we sold out at Gen Con. And
two pallets. We sold out two pallets.
In like 2 days.
Over the 3 days of Gen Con, by noon of the second day, it was gone.
Yeah. So,
and that wasn't just sampling; that was like people buying too.
We couldn't sample,
yeah,
right? Because because of the food contracts.
Yeah.
At the convention hall,
we opened a bag, poured it on the table, set the stuff up, and talked about.
So you could smell it, but we couldn't serve coffee. We couldn't sample it,
wow.
right, because of the restrictions. So people were just right,
but they loved that it was the first thing we would say is we were a family coffee company, which is we're two families, you know, connected to the family in Colombia, and. then that story extended into these personal relationships with the coffee farmers. And what we realized over time is that, in particular, there were a lot of women coffee farmers. And the reason is because either there was just no male figure left in that family, or some other issue had happened where they're trying to run, operate, cultivate, harvest, take for processing this coffee with all the challenges that come along with growing anything in the mountains. Plus they have kids and they have a family, mm-hmm. and there's schools there, so how do we, plus everything we always deal with, car issues, medical issues, the utilities, you name it. So we started to focus largely on creating direct relationships to purchase coffee from the women coffee growers, which just simplified their life to some degree. And then with that, my wife was very instrumental in working with those women because she has such a relationship with them. She's also an esthetician and is a fitness professional, and combining that with a lot of her family down in Colombia who are dentists and other medical professionals, we'd set up some clinics to help take care of the women,
because cool.
they just don't go, they don't have time to get down to, so we're looking forward to doing more of that in the future. So that all became pure Canopy. So while all of that story and coffee fed into Geek Grind, which took on kind of a life of its own in the entertainment space, where now we have relationships with a lot of large entertainment streamers and groups like Critical Role, with millions of followers, and most recently The Witcher, that people know from gaming, book, and Netflix fame. We create really fun teas and coffees and products there. Pure Canopy, which is our other brand, really took on that personality of the women coffee growers. And we developed that coffee, now starting to grow that into food service and other corporate environments. Yeah.
And it worked. The starting with Geek Grind, right? It was very focused, right? As far as our demographic. And the Pure Canopy brand really helped us kind of expand, because a lot of people didn't get it, right? The Geek Grind, right? Yeah. That's fine, because if you don't get it, then for you, right? You know,
not everybody wants a dragon or a wizard on the coffee, but if you do, come to Geek Grind.
Yeah, yeah, an orc riding feral hog. Yeah,
you're either in that camp, or you're kind of not in that camp.
You either get it or you don't.
Exactly.
But coffee's coffee, right? But it's packaging. Right. So the Pure Canopy really helped us to, like, my parents, right? Or, other people, right? They're like, I don't get it. Right. But Pure Canopy, they're like, oh,
yeah. Yeah. Because branding and messaging makes all the difference. You have to have it, because if it doesn't speak to, look at some of the big brands. They've done very well in their marketing strategies.
Yeah, right.
And that is what has allowed it to be adopted to the masses, because they had those type of strategies, not just, I think you do have to have a good product in order to sell, right? Sure. There's nothing worse of having it all put together and then someone drinks it like, this is disgusting and I don't want to drink it. Yeah. It's got to be good too.
Yeah. Right.
You bring up a good point, Jeff, because when we first started, one thing that became very clear is that we had the benefit of having generational coffee expertise in Colombia in the mountains. Like, this is where our coffee is coming from. So I relinquished to Gustavo and the team there, and my wife to some degree, the quality sourcing, blending in the early years, especially. And then came back to Jamie on this side. And I told Jamie and the team that grew after it, the idea here is that we have amazing coffee, but we're not going to be in the business of having the best coffee, because I'm not sure if there's a mouthpiece big enough and enough money to tell that story.
Right.
But we have to have amazing coffee to be in the business. Now, what's the business? The business is Geek Grind. The business is Pure Canopy and that, right? So we had the luxury and the benefit, and very grateful to have amazing coffee from day one, and just amazing experts in Colombia in the mountains watching over that for us, right? And then Jamie and I could focus on being storytellers and disseminating that.
Yes, right. And now it's kind of evolved, right? Especially just as of recently. So everything kind of done down in Colombia. Now we're kind of migrating into
transitioning,
right? Yeah. You've got a facility here in Chicago. You start doing some, I remember when you came with the K-Cups and you had all the little silver tops and, yeah. and kind of that evolution. So maybe talk about, you know, kind of you went from that single source.
Talk about the everything. Basement and the kitchen and your house. And,
yeah. And then how it's evolved into the warehouse. And now yeah. you got your own roasting facilities and capabilities and what the kind of the, those benefits have allowed you to do.
Well, for us, I mean, that's as with a lot of things in the world, COVID impacted us in a way that actually helped our company get to where it is today. COVID, when we were bringing in roasted bagged coffee,
we were roasting it all in Colombia, packaging everything. It all there and bringing it up here very quickly off an air freight. But yeah.
Right. And very quickly, right? We had 4 full containers. Right. So we had.
Tell everyone, what is a container? Like, I don't think people understand what a container is.
A container, a full container, 40-foot container is 20 pallets of coffee. And each pallet is anywhere between 800 and 1,000 pounds of coffee.
That's a lot of coffee.
So that's a lot of coffee. So we had 4 containers hit the shores here the last week of January through February of 2020. Well, as we all know, second week of March,
everything
stopped.
Yeah.
So now we have.
And these were coming in, the containers being the big metal boxes coming in on ocean freight from Buenaventura, Colombia, through the Panama Canal, up through Baltimore, and we rail it over from Baltimore.
Right. So
that all stopped.
It all stopped immediately. Like, and
4 weeks. Yeah.
We have, you know, hundreds of tons of coffee. We had to pivot very quickly as to what our business model was.
From a production standpoint.
From a production standpoint and from an offering standpoint. So, you know, we kind of fell back into our comfort zone of commercialization and licensed product. So we very quickly were able to start like, hey, I wonder if company X would want a licensed coffee. Well, it did. And it took off.
That's when we started roasting and doing that. So that relationship was Pathfinder from Paizo out in Washington. So Pathfinder is a large competitor on tabletop gaming to Dungeons and Dragons, which everybody's familiar with. And so they had actually picked up some of our coffee at Gen Con the previous year.
Yeah.
Just actually called us and said, hey, would you make coffee for our fans? So, yeah, so we started roasting.
Before that, we started flavoring.
Ah, yeah,
right? Because coffee. When we first started, you know, people are like, oh, it's kind of.
Americans like flavored coffee.
Like the coffee experts, right? Look down their nose at flavored coffee, right? But
it took me a while to explain to the Colombians in the mountain that we're.
Well, there's the rest of the world and then there's the US.
Yes.
Right? So,
right.
But we kind of came to the realization is that our customers were buying the Dragon coffee, right? We would say, hey, you like coffee? Yeah. You like dragons? Yeah. We have Dragon coffee. People are like, take my money, right? So we quickly realized that we do have excellent coffee, but that's not really where we're hanging our hats.
Yeah.
So we said, let's try
from a differentiation standpoint.
Yeah, yeah. So let's try some flavored coffee. Yeah. So we started flavoring coffee and started killing it. We're blowing it out the doors. And we go through 4 containers of coffee rather quickly. And, you know, in the wake of COVID, right, there were logistics issues globally, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, everybody knows some people are closer from it, some people kind of heard of it. It became a better business model for us to start roasting our own coffee instead of bringing it up roasted because you can get green faster. Right?
And we grew to the point where we needed to really control all that, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of your listeners will probably relate to this too. Everything we've done started like in the kitchen, right? So when we decided, let's flavor coffee, how do you do that?
Yeah.
That must be complicated. There must be stuff in it. We had to learn it all. And then, you know, it was, you know, let's get the first start with the KitchenAid mixer. And
my wife's KitchenAid mixer
is very.
Did you just use your background or was it like, let me go to google.com and do you flavor coffee?
Well, yeah, reach out to people we know and.
A healthy level of complete ignorance. And I think we can do that.
It's the best way business to start. And that's how you figure things out. Because then from the ground up how things work.
Right.
So if and when you pass it on or have people to do it, you know what the ins and outs of it are. Same thing with what we're doing today and podcasting. I had zero clue what goes into it, what you need to do, and you just have to
lean into it.
It was, the scientific method, right? You just, let's try this. Nope. Try it again. Do a pound. Another pound. Oh, yeah. I think we're onto something, right? Mm-hmm. There's our control. Let's see if we can replicate that. Let's see if we can replicate it in.
Yeah. So, about what it is when you're flavoring a coffee. What actually, because people probably don't know, is it whole bean? Is it ground? What are you doing to infuse
give
the flavor?
Them, the
short tour of that. Yeah.
You flavor roasted coffee. Yep. Whole bean roasted coffee gets the flavoring. We get the flavoring. It's formulated for coffee.
Natural coffee flavor, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all natural, but it has...
It's like a recipe. Right?
It is a recipe, you add per pound. We figured out, figured out how much per pound.
Mm-hmm.
You
a lot of testing.
And you mix it, right? We have a big drum mixer, like a confectionery mixer.
Big
part of our business looks like a big candy company now.
What they used to make the caramel
That's
corn.
It. And right. Similar, corn very similar, and, yeah.
Powdered
yeah.
anything.
Except it's ours holds like 100 pounds. So
figure out the timing and...
The timing and
it sits.
And trial and error. And then you have to let it sit overnight, at least 24 hours.
For it, grind
it. Because the roasted shell gets hard, right? So you have to give it time for the flavor to
infuse,
to penetrate that shell. Because if you don't, then during the grinding process, it all just it's a very small percentage of the coffee is actually flavored, mm-hmm. right?
So. And I would say the way that we've now done our flavoring is I'd say it's more flavor infused, right? So our vanilla flavored coffee. Has a wonderful natural vanilla taste to it. But of course, that's going to be different than pumping in 3 pumps of liquid syrup, right? So our customers actually take our coffee and make their own recipes with it as well. Yeah, but that one of the many, many, many learning curves, right? Of figuring out, how to do it. And
Literally in my basement with the big mixer.
Right. So you figured out flavoring, we're kind of potentially coming out of COVID and now you've got facility, which you've always had the facility, right? At least
we grew too fast. We're literally, like I said, we're doing it in my kitchen and in my basement, right? I have a finished basement, had to move like all furniture and stuff. And we had production there and the grinder, industrial sized grinder and everything. We're doing that.
Yeah. Pre-COVID, I should say, from a volume standpoint, we were doing a lot of coffee volume, but we were packaging, roasting, and bringing it in directly from Colombia.
Right, so it was just getting it to consumer.
So then what we did is we sort of had this valley of production where then we had to take over production, right? So we were already up and running a particular type of business in the coffee business and then had to change it all. So that's where we ended up in your basement and on friends' ping pong tables, packaging, and... Then buying production equipment, filling machines.
Yeah, then we got our space, a small space. It was a depressed retail space, right? Which there was tons of coming out of COVID. So we had a small storefront. Yeah. And converted that into production and warehousing and pick and pack and everything. And we've outgrown that. I think we have probably 4 or 5 times the space we started with now. And then, we got a roaster. We keep doubling up on our machines, right? Our filling machines, our grinders, and then now we're roasting. We roast.
And, up until, recently in the way we look at our history, either myself or Jamie or both of us would be roasting until 3 a.m, 4 a.m, right? Trying to catch orders and, take care of our larger wholesale customers or chase Christmas, right, for e-com, for Geek Grind. And literally, he and I would run out of hours in the day because we would probably sleep at least 2 hours, at least, in 24. So then we started to find the need, to bring some people in. Then we've been very lucky where we have a family business between two families. We either have Katie, who runs all of our operations, shipping and whatnot. She's your niece.
Yeah.
Amazing.
My niece, yeah.
So it's been friends or family that we've been able to hire as well, which is for us fantastic.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's at the degree of trust and keeps keeping it in the family.
Keeping it in the family. And right? You can smack around your kids like you can't.
And they're part of the
strangers.
Yeah,
so
that's true. And our kids, oh, college, yeah, it's been a lot of, before we had employees, we made our kids work for us, you know, in the summers and as they've been in college. So it's been a family affair all along for sure.
Yeah. So we've got Geek Grind, Pure Canopy.
Yep.
There's other, what, PBR?
Yeah. So we've done, so from a license standpoint, we've worked with, Pathfinder,
Henson.
The Jim Henson Studios. So back when we had the toy company, one of the last agreements that I wrote, with the toy company was with the Henson Studios for Dinosaur Train, which is a preschool show on PBS.
Dinosaur right? Train.
So Jamie and a couple other guys did all the toys for Dinosaur Train.
Yeah, I did that. I was
something.
Yeah, I was the design director for the entire line. So.
That's right. Yeah. And because Jamie was a director of new product development at the toy company, which is how we originally met before we sold that to Tomy. And so I knew the Henson people. And that quick story there was we were looking, we had a Pathfinder relationship with that gaming company, and I was looking for some more just pop culture things to do. And I had seen just an article that the 35th anniversary of Labyrinth, the movie, was coming up. And I thought, Jim Henson Labyrinth. So I looked on LinkedIn, the old Rolodex, and the same folks worked there. And I said, hey, how you doing? They're like, well, where you been, you know, for X number of years? I'm doing coffee now. And they're like, of course you are. Like, what's all that about?
Well, let's go for toys and coffee.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. And so I said, well, here's the thing. You want to do tea and coffee with Labyrinth? They're like, we love that idea. So we did that. And The Princess Bride with Act 3. So the different pop culture things, Critical Role,
that's a newer one.
Yeah.
Right?
A lot of people may not know Critical Role, but a lot of people do. They're a group of, streamers, gamers that have grown, on Twitch and YouTube to millions of followers. Work with a group, Nerdrotic, which also is in the next couple of months, he'll cross 1 million subscribers, I think, on YouTube. So we have a nice balance of our own core internal products and also some licensing arrangements, right? Which is really where I came from in my experience. And that licensing not only gives us unique, fun things for our current customers, but gives us some fresh ground with exposure to new customers. And then in addition to Pure Canopy, which is really our food service position and whatnot, the third leg on the stool, so to speak, that we launched just in the past year has been Skybloom coffee. And in that case, we saw an opportunity to use coffee for fundraising and marketing solutions for corporations. So, for instance, we work with a large mortgage company, 60 offices across the country, and those agents want to keep in touch with their customers,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
However, on average, people who buy homes move through them every 5 to 7 years, right? So how do we keep in touch with these people? So we've created programs that these agents can automatically send coffee on a regular basis to say, hey, if you're buying or selling today? No? Okay.
Yeah, I still get that. Later, I still get that for that. The previous houses, I'll get the Christmas card or the random thing. It's like, if you ever need something, I'm in the area.
So what became apparent is that we could create what it comes down to is a marketing solution that is opened in the kitchen or in the office, right? So the read rate's 100%, so to speak, on whatever content that marketer wants to put in there, right? And then we sit that on top of our existing subscription business, basically.
Yeah.
And can manage that for their customers. So that's been that marketing, that corporate marketing side has been a nice growth side of the business just in the past year.
Now you've got tea coming out, you got hot cocoa. And is it just the Mexican chocolate? That one is
the best. Hot chocolate. Yeah, we get really
so good
reviews on that.
I like to say we have the best hot chocolate, but
it is pretty good.
What is that under all, again, same thing, is it able to go under any of the brands?
It is. Yeah. And we have some different formulations across the different brands, but yeah, we offer a few under Geek Grind, a few under Pure Canopy, and we offer it under Skybloom as well. In fact, you know who uses a lot of hot chocolate and tea is Michigan State University.
Yes, so Michigan State University.
Skybloom on the corporate marketing side works with Michigan State to care for their donors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they're always fundraising as well. So they use a variety of tea, coffee, and they're Spartan, Sparky, the Spartan.
Yeah, they have Spartans. The Spartans. Yeah, they have their mascot.
Yeah.
On the label. And Sparty.
Sparty.
For Skybloom, we do custom labeling and stuff like that.
That's right.
So, right, we do for...
So, yeah, CMG Financial is the mortgage company, Michigan State and others. So,
because... It's almost like a private label business.
Yeah, so that kind of brings that story full circle, because as we've had to learn everything, we've brought everything inside. We used to roast outside, now we roast inside. We used to have packaging done outside, now we do it ourselves. Flavor, everything really now, packaging, distribution, we're doing all of our own shipping and whatnot. So the fact that we have all that inside now and we have all those competencies let us do things like Skybloom, where we can go to a group and say, we can do the shipping, the packaging, the unique flavorings, anything you want.
Which is known as vertical integration. It gives you the ability to control basically the whole supply chain outside of the actual farm, per se.
Right.
But even then, it's technically kind of, you know, you're working with familia, right?
And every time we brought something inside, it's been a huge benefit.
Yeah, it's been a big jump for the company. I mean, just down to printing, right? Yeah. Getting the equipment to do our own printing for stickers, right? For our sample stickers, for our, you know, you typically when we launch a new coffee, the bags will be stickered instead of fully printed, just, you know, because of minimum order quantities that are required by the place that.
And we like to trial and test a lot of things.
Right. Because, sometimes you think it's going to be awesome.
And almost all my ideas are awesome.
Right. But
almost.
Yeah. But sometimes the customers don't think so.
You've had enough.
So
I think
they just don't understand. They don't understand it. That's what it is. Yeah. But yeah. So it's like, but bringing those, being able to sticker things in-house, bring the equipment to print our own stickers.
Like deep-fried coffee.
Deep-fried coffee. We tried it. Right?
I was in Colombia. Here's a 30-second story. I was in Colombia a few years ago, and I went to some of the family there that are chefs, and they have some cafes and restaurants. So I went to the back to see how things are done there. A lot of things are deep-fried. A lot of things. Like almost everything in Colombia. Many things. So we were looking at the fryers and whatnot in the back of this one particular family member's, and he was deep frying coffee. Hmm. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I just take the green coffee beans and instead of roast them with air or in a drum, he's roasting them by exposing them to hot oil.
Okay, well, how do you, one, get a coffee bean to not fall? Like, is he putting it in a sachet?
It's in a basket. In a basket,
just like French fries.
It's in a basket. Okay. You know, so the coffee beans are... If you ever, you know, held the green coffee beans, they're like little dense rocks, right? They're very dense and very heavy, unlike a roasted coffee bean, which is expanded and light because it's lost its water weight. So he's putting them in the basket, like a fryer basket, and deep frying them. And then we had some, and I'm like, wow, it's not only really good, but it's really different, you know? And as far reaching as Google is, I'd only seen one other occurrence after looking very, very, very deeply into Google, too deeply, to find somebody who'd ever deep fried coffee, right? But they were doing it just because, I don't know, they can't. They got coffee and deep fryers. Yeah. So we came back and we actually did that and it was fantastic. We did some Southern deep fried coffee, honey bourbon deep fried coffee.
Oh, we did chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffles.
Because we can flavor stuff, right? Yeah. Deep fried, let's do chicken and waffles. Because it started when you deep fried it. Right. As soon as it comes out, it's like, oh, it smells like fried chicken, right? Because it
smells like fried chicken.
So that's why I'm like, hey, we should do chicken and waffles. And right.
Yeah. You got some coffee in my fried chicken. You got some fried chicken.
So, yeah. So we did. So we flavored it, you know,
yeah.
Maple syrup and waffle.
Yeah. That's out of the box.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But because we can, because of that vertical integration.
Right. You have those abilities to play around and at least be like, well, let's see if it works.
Let's try it. We'll put it out there. And another thing, you know, running in the background, like all of our infrastructure for sales, right? All of our websites, everything is all in-house. We do that ourselves. So we could stand up, if we had an idea right now, we could stand it up on the website by the end of the day.
And we could ship it Monday. Start selling.
And we could be shipping, by Monday. And that's, you know, that kind of agility has really helped us.
But we have tried to learn to self-edit, which is sometimes when you have so much, you know, we tend to be overly creative sometimes. And And there is a point, actually a point in the last, from just, you know, business tactics standpoint, we've had to go back to some things that we learned when we had the big toy and different products company, which is there was a process called kill, milk, grow, right? So you look at your product line and you're going to kill some of it, you're going to milk some of it because you've got a nice business there. And there's some you just want to chase and grow, right? So we had our first kill, milk, grow experience.
Kill, milk, grow.
And it's, I like that. It is. It's a pain. It can be a painful experience, especially if, as a founder, because what you're doing is you're basically looking at your kids, your children, right?
Yeah.
And there's some that they're not reaching expectations as maybe some of us did when we were younger, or some of our kids do. So that, you know,
and it's hard. You know,
you can't get rid of your kids, but you look at something that you're very familiar with. And
we do the artwork and it's like, it's a good product. It looks great, right? The name, because you have to come up with a good name, right? You have to come up with good artwork. Yeah. You have to come up right with the whole.
So shtick. I did that first process and I sent through, I'm like, here's the ones we're killing. You know, and it wasn't just Jamie. It was a few other people in the company. They're like, I was like, there was a mini revolt on a few. And I'm like, okay. All right, they're in there. We're gonna.
There was only the one.
They got the reprieve.
The Bananas Foster.
Was it the Bananas Foster?
Pat wanted to kill it. I was like, I'm sorry to see that one go.
It sells. It's just at some point the line gets so big.
Yeah.
You know,
you've got to. Yeah,
it becomes untenable, unshoppable.
Right.
So.
Right.
So that one got the government last minute reprieve.
Yeah,
and back on the show.
And who was instrumental?
Katie,
your mom.
Oh, my mom. Yeah, my mom too.
yeah, me and Katie. Yeah, when mom stepped in and said, "Yeah, you're putting that one back in," it was like, "Okay,
yeah, I forgot about that."
yeah.
So,
moms can do that to us. You know, even as adults, they have that unwavering power somehow.
That's okay. But
so it's been an amazing tour, right, of business for us. We've both seen our careers from the corporate side, right, as we've been involved in growing various companies, and then from the entrepreneurial side too. So it's been quite a ride.
Wow. I love it. I'm gonna get into some of my weeds questions, so you guys haven't seen these, but this is my favorite part.
All right.
Cool. All right. In the world of coffee, there are often debates about the best brewing methods.
Brewing.
What's your personal favorite way to brew and enjoy your coffee?
It's a complicated question, right? Because there's two, right? And they're under different circumstances. If I really want a nice cup, or my wife, I'll do a pour over. And I was fortunate enough to be I learned how to do my pour overs in Colombia in the labs from some of the foremost experts in the world. So
in their cupping labs. Yeah.
In their cupping labs. So yeah, I'll do a pour over, but, I do a cold brew as well. I do a lot of cold brew, especially in the summer. And so, like I said, it depends.
And that's resulted in the company having amazing cold brew, really.
Yeah, just because I like cold brew so much.
Well, and cold brew is so easy to do. Literally, you steep coffee.
More people should do it.
You know, in around 24-hour, 16-24-hour time frame, pull it out, dilute it.
But in the age of Keurig, pop, slam, button, cup of coffee. People don't want to wait overnight.
Yeah.
For that.
So for you, it's cold brew and pour over.
And pour over, yeah, for me.
We both probably drink the most, certainly by volume, just drip coffee. You know, we have a couple of good drip makers. I do drink a lot of K-Cups. We started making K-Cups for the Keurig compatibles a long time ago, several years ago, and that has grown to be... Now, we brought that inside, so we're actually manufacturing our own.
Oh, yeah.
Manufacture outside.
Our own K-Cups now.
So we get the lids printed, and that's been great because we like to fill it. Really fill them. We like to have extremely fresh coffee go in those K-Cups. So I drink a lot of our K-Cups because we're usually drinking them day 1 to 7 days after we make them. So I think for me, French press though.
French press?
Yeah, French press. Because it's quick. I think I just like the control of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but once you get into the Nespresso Virtuoso, the newer line, let me know, because that's my new obsession because of the ease of, because I had Keurig, but then we kind of ditched it and went over to Nespresso, and because they use the centrifuge system on the latest line, the crema on it is just for the espresso.
And you're not going to get that.
Even when I was making hand making, I couldn't get that kind of crema unless you have a $5,000 machine. You're not getting that. I'm sorry. Even with a $1,000 machine, you're just not. And I was blown away.
It's incredible.
Yeah. With what those pods can do, but they're very limited on what you can even get.
Yeah. Right. And I think it, for me, it's more like, I like espresso, I like cappuccinos. I like those processes. It's just, it's a volume thing.
We both consume a lot of volume.
Yeah.
I can't have too much. If I have more than that, my espresso, like my double shot, I'm frazzled all day.
Yeah.
It's too much. Like my body is so sensitive to caffeine.
Oh, I'm so desensitized.
I don't think I have a caffeine sensitivity anymore.
No. Yeah. Whatever receptors.
And when we're in Colombia, they drink it at 10 at night and still go to sleep.
That's insane. I don't
know. Decaf coffee there is not a thing.
No, they're like, decaf, why? Well, what would you, what?
Flavored coffee is not a thing.
We were literally in the threshing plant and we asked the head of this, you know.
I mean, they've heard of decaf.
We asked about like, can you guys get decaf? Yeah. And she's like, I don't know. Let me make a few phone calls.
We've heard of this. We've heard of this.
What is this foreign concept of decaf coffee?
Yeah.
Well, it's another interesting thing you learn. You know, most of the vast majority of the high quality Colombian coffee, and this is probably similar to a lot of coffee growing regions, is exported, right? It's not consumed in Colombia, right? Colombia has only really developed what we would see as a coffee culture in the last number of years, right? I mean, it really happened first in the States or first in Europe, and now you start to see they have some really outstanding Juan Valdez stores, and now that they've moved those into the States, there was one in the Miami airport. And
but when we first went down there, the domestic, so like Pat said, like all the good coffee, your coffee is, they have the screenings, right? Then there, it's numbers, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, right? And the national organization that kind of oversees coffee in Colombia, that you can't export anything under a certain screening.
And a lot of it's just visuals too, right?
Yeah, they're still good
coffee. It's just
right over a certain size. The screening, so the screens are holes, right? And they shake it down, right? And everything under 14 stays. Everything above 14 gets exported. So the domestic coffee in Colombia is really like not as good as you think it would. That it should be.
Right,
like,
so taking the, Colombia, the higher end stuff
because all the good stuff goes.
Yeah.
Getting back to your question. Tinto is what they call it. Tinto, yeah, the least expensive street coffee.
Oh yeah,
in Colombia, right? You walk down the street and for like probably equivalent of $0.20 US, you can, the guy with literally a backpack and a pump, you just get a little.
Literally, wow.
Yeah, so anywhere from that to a pour over, as long as I got coffee.
And it's funny you mentioned coffee's becoming a cultural phenomenon, right? Like it's over the years and it just keeps developing, you know, different trends, different styles. What's the trendiest or most unconventional way you've seen people enjoying your guys' coffee?
Well, other than our deep fried coffee. well, you know, we're starting to see a lot of some people for the first time using it in recipes.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's where I was going to go. Are they cooking with it? Are they rubbing stuff with it?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. We've started to develop some of our own drink recipes and things like that. And
adult
drinks and, you know, alcoholic drinks and recipes and whatnot, and started to post that really at the request of consumers. Yeah. So
Well,
it's nice. It's nice. Yeah. And your wife,
she likes the coffee.
Little martini. Espresso martinis.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see when your product starts to get pulled into those areas too.
Nice. What's the most unusual or creative coffee related event or promo you guys have been a part of?
Oh, they're all weird.
Yeah.
There's a.
Okay, what's the weirdest of the weird? Really got to think on that one.
Probably. well, I would say as a unique entry of the unique entries into the coffee space over the years by thousands of companies. I think just going back to the fact that we created Geek Grind with Dragon's Roast and Elven Enlightenment and Dwarven Dawn and Wizard's Mist and Elder's Fathom, which is a Cthulhu Mind Flayer water beast, right? From Who's the author?
H.P.
Lovecraft back in the day. I mean, that's how we decided to get in the coffee business, right? And we went to a gaming convention, right? So I would say that on paper would have been struck down by any intelligent, experienced businessman.
Well, and
but that's what we did.
Yeah. So, and like another offshoot of that is we decided it's like, you know, you're going through social media, and all of a sudden, like because of what we're doing, you're starting to get pounded from all these ancillary kind of demographics. Witches, like
black cats and witches are super popular. I can just tell you that.
Yes.
And you came out with the witches.
We have witches. So we came out with witches brew.
Put a black cat on it.
Black cat in front of a full moon.
It's a really good blend.
Came up with a custom blend. It
just blew up. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of our, like one of the stalwarts of our line. And we've had some subscription box type that do like in that stuff. It's like you get a crystal and a wand and sage and a bag of our coffee. So, I mean, if you want, like,
yes, you do.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
So that's, yeah, as far as weird, like promotions, I wouldn't say it's weird. It was just to us unexpected, right? It was just, we kind of say, hey, maybe there's something there. And
what I'll say there
was something there.
Yeah. Just finish off on that question. I think I'll say, you know, one thing we did learn through our mutual experiences with the toy business and branding and whatnot is that how to find the passions of people, right? That's really what Geek Grind is about, and even Pure Canopy with Women Grown Coffee and whatnot. And when we had the toy company, we made Harley Davidson replicas, made all their replicas, right? So we worked really closely with the teams in Milwaukee and that. And as we thought about and learned from them too about their branding, if Harley Davidson, at least in the past, all due respect to Harley Davidson, and they'll say it themselves, if it had to be about reliable transportation, if that's what they're hanging their hat on, right, or good gas mileage, right, they would have been out of business a long, long time ago, right? Mm-hmm. Harley Davidson is about problem solving, like every product that's successful.
Yeah.
So what problem are they solving? I'm a lawyer or a doctor or anyone in my normal walk of life, and I want to express to the world that I'm something different too. All I do is put on my jacket, sit on the bike, problem solved.
Yeah.
Right. And I go down the road and I immediately show people who I feel I really am. Right. That's the problem Harley Davidson solves. And that is the brand that they've grown. Right. That's why people would buy a Harley Davidson. Otherwise, buy a Honda, buy something affordable. Reliable, rather. You know, I don't know if Hondas are affordable anymore. But so, anyways, when we see somebody, like, why do people love, Witch's Brew or, Dwarven Dawn and things like that? Well, it's because we all like to wrap ourselves in the things that we're passionate about, right?
Yeah.
And whether it's in our kitchen or our office or there, if we can find ways to satisfy ourselves and express those passions and show the world the things we're interested in, and or satisfy that with a gift for family and friends.
You're going to find it out of at least 300 million people. There's going to be some in that realm that are going to want it, right, like it, and cling to it.
Yeah. And you know, and that's turned out to be something that's just phenomenal. I mean, we're now launching the Witcher product with, the crew from
CD
Red Project, originally a Polish company, with the gaming and whatnot, and now all the rights to that and working through that. So that passion of fantasy and whatnot is huge, and we've been able to marry it quite well with
right
and consumable.
And it's for me and Pat, I mean, this goes back, like our connection with this whole demographic goes back to when we were kids. I mean, we grew up, right? We were Stranger Things, right? That was me and my friends.
Lord of the Rings.
In 1982 and 1981, right? In my friend's basement that was wood paneled, right? With the dark wood.
We were those kids.
Full,
yeah, literally.
Leather furniture. And
the, I mean, without the carpet. Whole underworld monster thing. That.
Then you weren't doing it right.
That was in our
heads. You weren't doing it right, Pat.
You didn't tap into the dark side, the underworld?
Oh, we tapped in.
But so, I mean, and that's, I mean, so that background, so yeah. We're there. I mean, we know the product. We're not just like, hey, let's fake it.
Right.
And we spent our adult careers in the toy and game business.
Yeah.
Right. So gaming, right? I helped co-author a whole gaming system, like on the side when I was working in the toy business. People, our customers get it. right? They know, and it's like we're not just like, hey, buy our dragon coffee. It's like because we have that passion too, and I like to think that that communicates through.
Yeah, it can. They feel it.
Yeah,
you can tell when it's just slapping a label on it and selling it. Yeah. It's another when it's you're talking about it, and then you can even get into conversation, and people are they start to understand. Okay, they're more than just they truly have a passion for this, just like we do.
Yeah,
right.
And we found that community on Kickstarter too. You know, Kickstarter started with a lot of electronics and widgets and things like that as a way to crowdfund products and properties and whatnot. And then in the last number of years, it's really turned into a huge way to launch games, gaming platforms in particular. That's a big part of their audience. So we had previously had success there, and we did a Geek Grind Kickstarter when we wanted to
K-Cups.
We were doing some K-Cups externally. When we wanted to do it internally, we needed to buy the machinery and expand the lids and the whole thing. So we went out to the Kickstarter community and said, we're Geek Grind. You might have heard of us. And we want to grow the K-Cups out of the business. And we pre-sold essentially a large line of K-Cups there. So we've been able to find our tribe. You know what I mean?
Right.
And because we were fortunate to start making things that we liked. Like that we thought, I don't know if anybody's going to buy this.
Right? It's cool. Yeah, right? Let's do it. Cool.
So we just keep making stuff that we like. And, you know, 8 out of 10 times it works, you know. But when it doesn't work, it's just
more than 8. We'll go like 88 out of 100.
There's the engineer.
Fair enough.
You got an engineer here. So yeah. that's what you're getting right there.
But yeah, that's so we also really enjoy what we do. Right.
Yeah.
So
last one I got. Most coffee enthusiasts got some sort of ritual. What's your personal quirky, unique coffee drinking ritual? Right, you got your specific way, but is it got to be first thing in the morning? Is it got to be on the patio? Is it got to be with a book? Like, what is your stitch when you got to drink your coffee? Not when it's like on the work day and you know you're just on the go.
That's a good
but like
question.
When you get the relaxed time to downtime to enjoy a cup of joe.
Well, being in Chicago, right, you can only be outside. A very small time of the year for me, like on a Saturday morning, right? I have a deck on the back of my house that is, I've made it as comfortable as I want it to be. And
I should say his deck has a Facebook page. So
yeah,
it's called The Deck. So it's a little more than that.
You check in at the deck and people, it's like a badge of
honor. Can check in at his deck.
But yeah. So
as you were
on a Saturday morning, like, going, sitting out in the deck, right? When the sun's kind of coming across that morning yellow sun,
mm-hmm.
sitting on the deck, having a cup of coffee with my feet up, right? And I'll do it if I have time, if I'm awake enough, I'll do a pour over and then that'll set me up for the day. Otherwise, I'll do the drip and enjoy it almost as much.
What do you have, Pat?
I would say, while I have similar experiences around the house and whatnot, just this past weekend, before I came here to Chicago, we were in Bogota, Colombia, and we were there for a quinceañera, which is like when your 15-year-old yep. daughter has kind of her big party. So we were there with family in Bogota, and I have had a lot of coffee in Colombia. And now when I do have that, we did French presses at stayed at one of the uncle's houses, and we were sitting on the patio over – they live on the hillside overlooking Bogota. And I would say that all of my best coffee moments have been not just having the amazing high quality, close to the source coffee in a place like Colombia, but doing it with family and having a moment to think about how did this happen? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just having.
So it's almost like that same experience of like when you're breaking bread or food and bringing it together, the coffee brings everyone together for that ambiance.
Yeah. And just the thought of, you know, if you would ask me, like a lot of our lives, right? You know, if you look back, you know, 10 years ago, would I be here? How would that possibly happen? Right. You know, so those, I have time to think about that with good coffee.
Oh, yeah. We talk about this all the time because here we are in the coffee business, right? I mean, if somebody told you 10 years ago, you're going to be doing podcasts.
Yeah.
No.
Right?
No.
No.
Right?
No.
Right.
No way.
You're going to be sitting here. Yeah. And you'd be like, no way. And the same thing for us. I mean, the most memorable coffee moment that I had was on the first trip to Colombia. We went, when we first started, Pat had been there a bazillion times.
I kept telling him, you got to come down to Colombia.
So we're in the coffee business now. I have to come down. I have to see the plant. I got to meet the guys in the lab. I got to learn how to make coffee. I got to learn how to taste coffee, all that stuff. So we go, we're out at one of the farms, and it was like an episode of like Destination Unknown, right?
I remember the experience you're talking about. Yeah.
Beautiful farm. But you're going up the Andes, like on dirt roads. No guardrails. No, it's dirt roads for 2 hours.
Passing through the rivers.
Fording small streams. Yeah. And we get to this farm, and we're looking at the farm, learning about it. I'm like soaking it all in. And then in the afternoon.
5,000-6,000 elevation. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the afternoon, it's like it's break time, right? You have
coffee time.
Coffee and bread, right? Fresh bread.
Fresh bread.
And like made bread right there
yeah.
on the farm with from the stuff on the farm. Like right. there's the cows, there's the chickens. There's
exotic caterpillar go across in the table.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're – and so I get this coffee and I'm eating this fresh bread and I'm sitting on this veranda and it was at the side of a valley and there was two – the valley kind of forked off this way and I'm sitting there and I'm drinking this coffee. This Colombian coffee that was literally grown 10 feet away, eating this bread that was made there today. What am I doing here? How did I get here? What?
It's because I texted you and I said, hey, I got an idea.
What is, I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What? And I'm looking, I'm overlooking the, this like fantasy valley of farms and fog and, right, birds and banana trees and coffee plants, and it was the most surreal,
yeah, for sure,
experience that I've ever had, yeah. And it was incredible. I mean, that's one of those things that's like when you ask me about like coffee experiences, that I still know what the I can remember what the coffee tastes like. I can remember what the bread tastes like. I remember the temperature of the air. It was embedded into my brain.
You know, an egg bread. Oh.
Yeah. So to sum it up, if you want to start a coffee company, you just hang out in a hot tub,
drink
tequila, right, and come up with ideas.
Well, first you got to find a Colombian girl.
Okay, I guess that. Yeah,
okay, so that we'll yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. All right, we're coming up on time. Where does everyone go if they want to learn more about the brands, what you guys do?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I will say first, we will take anybody to Colombia. And when you go with family. So if anybody's interested in going to Colombia, wants to learn about Colombia, insofar as been our experience, we're happy to do that. So let us know. Our shingles we hang out, Geek Rind Coffee is geekrindcoffee.com. Pure Canopy is purecanopy.com. Skybloom is skybloom.com. You can find us on similar versions of that on social, Instagram, and whatnot. Email us. Patrick, Jamie, at GeekGrind, at Pure Canopy. Those are our Gmail accounts.
We do have limited distribution, throughout the country. We if there's a game store or a comic book store near you, there's pretty good odds that they might have a few bags of us.
Maybe grocery stores, and we're actually redoing the entire line from a visual aspect, so hopefully grocery stores in the future. But yeah, that's where you find us. And if you send a note to any of those locations, any of the messaging, I'm going to probably see it.
Like, or me.
Or one of us will see it. So it's pretty unfiltered, our communication.
Great. I'll put it all in the show notes too, so everyone has easy access, quick link. Thank you guys for coming on. I love hearing the full story.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
It's great to actually sit down and just hear it all in one, because it's always been bits and pieces, but now to hear the full experience has been really great.
And congratulations on your podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Having fun talking to folks like you, just having conversations. That's what it's all about. So, all right.
Thanks for having us.
If you want to know more, check out the show notes. Got all the links in there. But until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.